Okay, before we begin, I want to thank again Rabbi Mayevsky for always coming through for us on the very last moment, all of the emergencies. I just feel as though I don't want to let it go to waste because today is a very unique day.
But you see, today I wasn't the closer, but you get less money.
Riviera.
I was only eighth inning, right?
I had a message from Israel that tonight at 9 o'clock in the time of Israel, any year at 2 o'clock p.m. other countries to say Quran Shema Israel for Shalom and Israel and the Rabbanim.
Okay, it's a very good thing. Okay, Rabbi. So today is a very unique day in the Hebrew calendar. Today is the 9th day of Teves. Now let's give some background. Let me actually read with you what it says in Shulchan Aruch. It is one of the most amazing pieces of Shulchan Aruch. The whole purpose of Shulchan Aruch is to tell us information, not to tell us what we do not know. So what does it say in Shulchan Aruch? In Siman Tov Kuf Pei, Yamim Shemisanim Bohem, the days which we fast. So it goes over here through B'chamish Os, B'chamish B'tishrei, I'm just reading in the middle of the simon. B'chamish B'tishrei, Meisra Esrim Ish Mi'Yisrael, V'nech Bash Rabbi Akiva. On the fifth day of Tishrei, does anyone do this? Anyone even know this? On the fifth day of Tishrei, that is, Tzom Gedali is the third day of Tishrei, get a day off. Fourth day of a day off, and on the fifth day of Tishrei is a fast day. What happened on that day? 20 people, Mesu Esher Mishmi Yisrael, 20 members of Klal Yisrael were Nifter, were died. Now, it doesn't say much about who these people were, who they were. Okay, it's not clear. The Nechbash, Rabbi Akiva was imprisoned. This was the beginning of his death. He was killed. We have a tradition. He died on Erev Yom Kippur, the moment of Kol Nidre, the moment leading into Yom Kippur, the very beginning of Yom Kippur, the very end of Erev Yom Kippur. Okay.
20 people, they died naturally?
No, it seems like they were killed. It seems like they were killed. At what point did this happen? I don't know. The commentators are very quiet as to when this happened. Okay, what are we referring to? Possibly, if you look at the commentators, there'll be more elaboration. I'm not familiar with this. Okay, on the seventh day of Tishrei.
So I would say, maybe that's why you say,
oh, it's
a Ruah,
you begin Yom Kippur Dami. Yes, that's what we do. Yes. Are the last letters of Or Zorua Latzadiku Liyishrelev Simcha spell Rebbe Akiva. The Reish of Or is Reish, is Rebbe. Zorua. The ayin of the word, so the last letter is Aleph of Akiva, Latzadik, the Kuf, Uli Yishrei, the Yud, Lev is the base, Simcha is a Hey. And in fact, because of this tradition, many want to argue, we see from here, that the correct spelling of Akiva is not the way we commonly spell it, with an Aleph at the end. But the correct spelling is with a hey.
Of course, it's the Talmud Bavli spells it with an aleph.
An aleph.
Yerushalmi
spells
it with
a hey. So the name.
By the way, the early, the printing the Talmud, the original text of the Talmud before it went to printing presses, that they would do it by hand, Akiva spelled with a hey.
It is a hey. In the Bavli.
In the Bavli.
So why did they change it? We have to ask him in the front. The person
you know, he wrote that. When I did it one time, I said it's a series. He said the guy that I didn't know, the man that published the book was sitting here. He said, that's my book. I didn't know what he meant.
The person who sits in the very, very front who learns with Mr. Nussbaum, he wrote the book. He wrote a very popular book. The history of the printing of the Talmud Bavli. I asked him many times to give a source.
$75.
Yeah, it's expensive. I asked him many times to speak. He should give us a synopsis of what he wrote in the book. He gives me a hard time. Maybe you put some pressure on him. He'll agree. He'll listen to you.
Okay. Is it available?
Yes. It's available. The printing of the Talmud. It's a big, thick coffee table book. It's a big book. It's expensive.
Was the first time it was printed after the printing press was
there? No.
it's printed many times.
Everybody had printing unified the amount of block per sefer.
Right.
Initially, you had Bava Basra had 224 blocks. Shabbos had also 200 blocks. And whoever wrote the Talmud had his own, you know, however he wrote it, he wrote it. So one person wrote Shabbos with 150 blocks. One guy wrote it with 180 blocks. One guy.
How they do Daf Yomi then?
They didn't. So that's the point. But they wanted to unify it, and because the original Shas didn't have Rashi, it had Rambam on the side.
It's very different. So which Rambam was that? Perashat Mishnayos?
All the Rambams that pertain to the Gemara.
It was a Likut.
And it didn't have four lines. When they codified the way they're going to print the Shas, they decided to put four lines of Rashi and Tosfos on the top as a reminder this is on page 53 of the book. So he had over there four lines on top to remind, you're supposed to learn it four times to remember it.
Very interesting.
He points out only three times in Shas that there is no at the end of Kedushin, and Avodah Zarah, you have a couple of blocks.
They have no Rashi, no four lines of Rashi.
Four lines on top because there wasn't enough.
We should spend some time on this.
There's more than three blocks.
We have to maybe one day spend time on this. Very, very fascinating. The history.
He mentioned Kedushin. He only said I'm on the Zohar Sanhedrin, but it's also
in Kedushin. All right. It's a very fascinating to learn about the history of the printing of the Talmud Bavli and the Talmud. The Talmud Yerushalmi as well. Okay. Now, and then the Shulchan Aruch goes further. What else do we fast? Okay, it goes through. Okay, I'm just getting an example. It goes through many days. I'm going to jump ahead, and then it says. I'll just jump to one more. The Chof Ches B'Kislev on the 28th day of Kislev. Now that is in the middle of Hanukkah. Okay, isn't this shocking? The 28th day of Kislev is in the middle of Hanukkah. Saraf Yehoyakim HaMegillah Shekosav Baruch Mipi Yirmiyahu. In Megillas Eicha, Megillas, the first three Perakim of Megillas Eicha were burnt by the Melech Yehuda on the 28th day of Hanukkah. So, 25, 26, 27, 28, the fourth night of Hanukkah was a very great tragedy for Klal Yisrael when Yehoyakim took Megillas Eicha, which was written by Yirmiyahu, the first three parakim, we have five parakim, the first three parakim was burnt by the Melech Yehuda. And therefore, it is a day when we are required, according to the Shulchan Aruch, to fast. It is a Tainis Tzibur. How could there be a Tainis Tzibur on Chanukah? Are you talking on Chanukah? It's not a Kasha. That's how it used to be. Chanukah was not, the way Chanukah was celebrated, Misham Kadmonios is definitely not the way it's celebrated today. It's unthinkable. What's going to be with the donuts? What's going to be with the donuts if you're not going to have to fast?
Eat the whole.
Only eat the holes, interesting. The holes is a very modern. I was studying research on donuts. The holes is very, very recent. I think even the 1950s. It's a very recent phenomenon to have donuts with holes. Donuts, even donuts in general in America, in the world, don't go back that far. I have a dough that's fried. That's a popular dish. It's also a relatively recent phenomenon in the world. But the hole is very, very recent. Okay, that's on the 28th day of Chanukah, we are required to fast because of the Megillas Eicha was Nisraf,
which preceded
Chanukah. Correct. By a long time, very good.
Yeah.
This took place by about 300 years.
Right.
It took place, the burning of the Megillah took place, 300 years before the miracle of Chanukah, absolutely. So it has Kedima. Chazal made a holiday, that's a very important principle. When you make a holiday, you don't fast on certain days, unless there was already in effect a fast day. So technically speaking, a person could fast on the 28th day of Hanukkah. Next, now we come to what's relevant to us today. B'shmoina b'teves, yesterday was a fast day. Nichtava ha-Torah Yevonis, the Torah was translated, was written in Yevonis. Bimei Talmai Hamelech, Talmai is an Egyptian king. HaMelech, V'haya choshech ba'olam shloisha yamim. There was choshech for 3 days. There was darkness. We do not really know what this means. This took, there was darkness in the world that came down to this world for 3 days. Obviously, this very touched upon the ninth makkah. Just like in the time of Yitzias Mitzrayim, the Yomesh Choshech, HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought upon the Egyptians 3 days of darkness, upon the Egyptians, Hashem brought upon us 3 days of darkness, when the Torah was translated. Now let me give you some background. According to the Muslim commentators, there were two separate events. And the first event was when Talmai HaMelech, doesn't say the date when this occurred, he brought into a room five zekanim, five elders, only five. And he demanded of them, I'm giving you a mission to translate the Torah Shebichsav, into Greek. And they did the best that they could, but they failed. The translation was lacking. And Talmai and the people who instructed these five elders to translate the Torah were disappointed. They just did not produce a quality product. It doesn't say when, how much longer, whether it was years later or maybe it was a short time later, he tried again. And this time he brought together 72 zekanim.
What was his goal?
Good question. This is a very, very big dispute. What was his goal? So we'll touch upon that in one moment. But whatever it was, a period of time later, it was a second attempt. He put together, he took 72 zekanim, elders, talmidei chachamim, and he had them, he demanded that they translate the Torah. There was a disagreement among the mefarshim if the 72 zekanim knew that they were not the only ones. In other words, one opinion holds, it's clear as day, is that each one did it, worked independently. They did not work as a team. Each one worked independently. The question is, did each one know that there are another 71 people doing exactly the same thing, and therefore they were super duper careful, that forced them to be super careful in how they translated the Chamish Chumshei Torah, or did each one of the 72 have no idea that there are another 71 people doing exactly the same thing?
So there was seven, how did they all know, and they all knew Greek?
Yes.
None of the Talmai scholars knew Hebrew.
They all knew Greek.
No,
they
but
all
none of Talmai, looking at the other way around. How come none of Talmai
knew Hebrew? So, can you ask me a very good question? We're going to touch upon this in one moment. Yes, all the questions are better than the answers. You're asking really tough. You're asking a lot of tough questions. But hold off and remind me that in one moment. Let's just.
He was looking for discrepancies.
So what was his plan? What was his goal? He took 72 people. Firstly, you have to realize, the first time, it was a failure. It was a failure. Five people were gathered to translate, and they produced a product that was not satisfactory. He then, attempt number two, he took 71 elders, and each one was independent. Did they know of the other? That's not so clear. And it was viewed as a nes min hashamayim, nothing less than an open miracle. Hanukkah miracle, right? Open miracle, they all produced exactly the exact same translation. And each one, all, and what's also bizarre is each one felt on their own, they should translate a word incorrectly. Why? That's a very tough question. Why? Because they didn't want to antagonize. They did not want to be politically correct. It's a very tough question how they allowed to forge the Torah. And they, each one of the 72 elders independently made, there's a different gear sois in what it says in the Mishnah Soifrim versus what it says in the Gemara, either 15 changes or 13 changes. In Mishnah Soifrim it says 13 changes. So, what happened?
Like white lies.
Not, whatever you want to call it. Politically correct. They did something to be politically correct. When this happened, darkness came down to the world for 3 days. That's all it says. We have very little explanation about what's going on, why is it a bad thing. We have art school today. We have so many different translators.
Talmudim wouldn't realize that there was something miraculous about it, that they all translated exactly the same?
I don't know. That's another big mystery. It's another big mystery. Yeah.
They collaborated. There's no question about it.
Well, they did not collaborate because they were all independent. There's a very famous joke from Rav Hutner. Rav Hutner's a very, very famous joke is that it was a very big miracle that there were 72 Zakenim and they were all independent. And they came up with the same, thank you very much. And they all came up with the same translation. It would have been a much bigger miracle if they all worked together and they can come up, they can agree on something. That would have been a much bigger miracle. That was too much to ask for. That you should take 72 rabbis in one room and they should all agree on something? They're all separate. They don't know from each other. Okay, so that's not such a big miracle. They'll all come up with the same solution to the problem. But much bigger miracle. They're all willing to collaborate. They're all willing to say the same thing. Okay, right. So in any event, this was now 3 days of darkness came down to this world. Now, what exactly was the Chorban? So someone suggests the Chorban was not because of the translation. Translation is not necessarily a bad thing. And what is the ultimate proof? And you cannot ignore this. So everyone has to deal with this. When Klal Yisrael crossed the Yarden, Klal Yisrael was instructed to establish stones, massive stones, on the Yarden. When they crossed in, and on these stones they were instructed to etch, Pashto says, Kol HaTorah Kula in 70 languages. The Torah was translated into 70 languages, etched into stone, preserved with lime, with sin on the outside, in order that any non-Jew in the world, from any part of the world, can come and see what it says in the Torah. So this is written, this is a mitzvah d'oraisa. This was a command given to Klal Yisrael, part of their requirement to enter into Eretz Yisrael. The world should know what it says in the Torah. Rav Shol Salanter, it's a fact, he wanted to translate, he wanted to preempt art scroll. He wanted very much to hire Talmidei Chachamim to translate the Talmud Bavli into
French.
To French.
I think so.
For what purpose? Not for the Jews. The Goyim should learn Gemara. It's a Pella. How are you allowed to teach? How are you allowed to teach Goyim Torah? You're not allowed. But they can learn on their own. And if they will learn the Talmud, he felt, I'm sure Salanter. There's no one today alive that's not, no Jew alive today that's not affected by Rav Shol Salanter. He revolutionized, like just like we have the Elif Alfei Avdolos of Freud. Rav Shol Salanter was preempted Freud. He was the Jewish Freud in a holy way. He opened up the subconscious of Klal Yisrael to appreciate that there's a subconscious and your actions are influenced by your environment and your behavior. He was really the same thing as Sigmund Freud. Lahavdil Elf Alfei Avdolos in an oifen of Kedusha. There's no doubt about it. And there's no one living today that was not affected by him. His koyach, what he did for Klal Yisrael in many facets, has trickled down ad hayoyim hazeh, and you cannot avoid him. And he felt it was a very worthy, important cause that the Talmud Bavli should be translated into French, not for the Jews. For the Goyim. The Goyim should sit and learn Gemara. They should appreciate the godless of Torah and appreciate the godless of Klal Yisrael, and that would be good for the Jews. Unbelievable. Yeah.
Inadvertently, Art School does the same thing by having the Vatican a big subscriber to Art School.
They're a big subscriber, but I'm not sure they have it.
Absolutely.
It's the Library of Congress.
That's
okay.
That's why they leave off the
Yashkamizes. Yeah, they take it out. Okay. So the question Rabbi Say is, so what's so terrible? What is so terrible? Why did 3 days of darkness come down to this world? There's nothing wrong with translating Torah. You're mechuyif to translate Torah. So there are many answers, there are many mahalchim, but one of the mahalchim is the 13 changes. There was deviation. You know why? Because Klal Yisrael was weakened. They felt they could not do an authentic translation. They were scared. If we're going to translate the word, the Torah, what it says, it will be a sakana for us. We didn't lack the emuna. We're embarrassed. We're embarrassed of what Hashem has given us. To translate the Torah is no big deal. You can translate the Torah because the Torah already told us to translate the Torah. You know, there are approaches that tell us, no, don't. There are many mahalchim in this approach. Some will tell you what I'm telling you is totally wrong. The different approach is totally wrong. You can't translate the Torah. Okay, that's not necessarily the pshat. Lo yosachin Hashem is chesed. Hashem did not do this chesed, but to give the, he didn't give it to them.
The Gemara says the translation is, you're not allowed to translate the Gemara because it says, lo yosachin.
No, you're allowed to teach Torah.
That's what the Gemara said.
I have to see inside. It's not so clear. Okay, that's what it says. But the Pasha says there's nothing technically wrong with translating it, letting them learn it. There was a deviation. There were 13 changes. There were 13 psukim that the Chachamim felt that if we translate it accurately, we will be in a state of danger. It will provoke the Goyim. You're embarrassed that Hashem gave you the Torah? You're embarrassed? What are you embarrassed of? This is the ultimate gift. You don't want to say the word Arneves because you'll insult his wife. That's what you're embarrassed of. So we don't appreciate what it was like in those days. Okay, if we were living there, we would run for cover. But this is a very great tragedy that we're embarrassed of what Hashem has given us. 13, and you know, it parallels 100 years later, this is a very important point to clarify. This event was done by Talmai HaMelech. Talmai HaMelech was basically, even though he was king of Egypt, he was under the influence of Yavan, of the Greeks, the Syrian Greeks. This was really the beginning, a tkufa of Malchus Yavan. There are two events of Malchus Yavan. There are two tragedies that took place in Malchus Yavan. One is the translation of the Torah. Number two is Hanukkah. They defiled the Beis HaMikdash. The event of translating the Torah into Greek took place 100 years before the Hanukkah miracle. 100 years. And this 3 days of darkness, and one of the approaches, which I find very satisfying, and answers many of the questions, is, it's the Choshech was because of the deviations, the 13 deviations. When they defiled the Beis HaMikdash, how many pirtzos, how many breaches did they make in the Chel, in the opening to the Beis HaMikdash? 13 breaches. Around the outside of the Beis HaMikdash was a very low wicker fence. And on this wicker fence it said, if you're a non-Jew, Atkan. Non-Jews may not go past this point. It's not for you. You have to stop here. You could send korbanos, but a non-Jew cannot go. It insulted the Goyim felt. What do you mean? What do you mean we can't go past this point? We own the world. So they breached this fence that was the boundary of where a Goy may not enter. 13 locations. Why the number 13? I don't know. Obviously, it's a very significant number. 100 years before, there were 13 breaches in the Kedusha of the Torah. And the Mishnah Sefer lists every one of the 13, and obviously each one represents doesn't just represent a translation of a word. There's a lot of depth in each one of the 13. If we had time, if I can prepare, we'll go through each of the 13, what it really represents. There are 13 things that we're afraid of in this world. We're embarrassed of.
The number 13, according to some, is the word Echad.
To breach the oneness of Hashem. Correct. The oneness, Hashem Echad. There were 13 things that we were affected by, what we would call today, if you'd want to go translate this, Western civilization. The Torah doesn't fit with Western civilization. So we have to make some deviations in order to accommodate, to make sure the Torah can fit in, can conform with the norms and the ideals, the ideology of Western civilization. So there are 13 politically correct corrections. What a chil Hashem. What a chil Hashem. And who did this? The Chacham did this. The Chacham did this? Our leaders? They were so afraid. They were so influenced. And of course, you'll give me 100 reasons why they had no choice. Chayra Shah, Eis Lasois, Pikuach Nefesh. There's no question about it. They did the right thing. But the fact that it came to this, that the Torah was defiled, and we're embarrassed at our Torah. We can't provide an accurate translation. That's a very great tragedy. And for that tragedy, 3 days of darkness came to this world. This is the reason why we fast, why we were mechuyev. It says in Shulchan, no one disagrees. Right? There's no v'yei shomrim. This is what it says in the book. This is, yesterday was a fast day. You're supposed to fast from Shmeres HaBoker until Tzeisak HaChavim. This was yesterday to commemorate this. Now the fact that 3 days of darkness came into this world, that itself opens up a whole topic of discussion. Why did Hashem punish the world with 3 days of darkness? Well, the answer is pretty obvious. What was the purpose of the 3 days of darkness in Yetzias Mitzrayim, in the Makos? We were able to enter into their homes, and see all the goodies they got. There were 3 days of darkness, they were immobilized, they were incapacitated. We went into their homes, and we searched around, and we found there in their homes all the Bizas Mitzrayim. And then when it came time to leave, Moshe says, go borrow from the Egyptians. So we knock on their door. Can we please borrow? I know you have a nice tuxedo. I want to wear a nice tuxedo when I come to the Shechina. What tuxedo? What are you talking about? I don't have a tuxedo. You certainly do. It's on the second floor in the closet, in the second bedroom in the closet. It's the third thing hanging on the hanger. How do you know that? I know. He couldn't deny it. They were in such shock that the Jews knew all the details. They knew their most private secrets. That was one of the purposes of their being Choshech. So here, it fits very well what we learned in Navi, what we learned in Amos these last couple of days, is that Midah Keneged Midah. The Zakenim were afraid to be politically correct. We have to go and allow, we have to go and adapt a little bit to the culture of society. There were 13 things that they felt that would not conform with culture. So we have to make adaptations. We have to make corrections. Hashem says, oh, you want to make corrections? You know what? Give them everything already. Why are you only giving them 13? Let the goyim have it all. The fact that darkness came for us, what does that really mean? The goyim now can come into our homes and it can check out all of our innermost secrets. Let them have it all. You want to give in to them, conform 13 different things? You know what Hashem says? Let them have everything already. Well, why stop by the number 13? It was like a midah keneged midah. Just like we find this idea in the time of Choshech of Makas Mecharos, the darkness of Uchol B'nei Yisrael Hoya Or B'Moish V'Yisam, and the Or of Klal Yisrael allowed them to go into the homes of the Egyptians and to see what's going on. If you want to go make 13 breaches in the Torah, so let the Goyim come and take all you got. I'll make it for you dark, and they'll come and they'll have Or, and they'll come and they'll see what's doing in your homes. You can have all the secrets. It's a very, very great tragedy. Now, you mentioned what you mentioned. How come, what was your question? How come the Egyptians?
They didn't have any.
Why didn't they? They knew already. They knew Hebrew, yes, right?
Yeah, I'm saying, if the 72 Chacham knew Greek, how come there was no.
So obviously,
scholars in Egypt?
Because we know, every child knows, you can't translate a pasuk in Chumash, literally. An eye for an eye. It doesn't mean an eye. It means you pay money. They ask them to give an accurate translation based upon Torah Shebal Peh. So that they didn't know. They knew they can translate the words literally, but obviously there's a lot more. The tradition, like you have a Targum Yoinasan ben Uziel, Targum Unkelis, there's more than just a translation. That is what they didn't. They knew Greek. We can translate the Hebrew words. But we want to understand what the tradition, the Torah Shebal Peh, how it translates the words of the Bible into that they didn't know. They needed the tradition, and only the Jews had that tradition.
Now this, King James Version, it says an eye for an eye, and it doesn't translate.
Okay, we can't bring Uriah from King James Version. We can't bring Uriah. No, I mean, it's a different purpose. It serves a different purpose. The purpose, obviously, Dr. Fuchter is correct. It cannot possibly be they didn't know Hebrew. I mean, the Hebrew was a language. It's not the hardest language to translate the simple words. But they didn't know Hebrew. They had all the resources available. They couldn't go figure out the translation of the Hebrew words, an eye for an eye. Obviously, and the Mepharshim say this, they wanted a translation based upon the tradition of the Torah Shebal Peh. And that's one of that was closed. That, you know, until now, that some want to understand that's the real reason why we fast, is because until this point in time, Torah Shebal Peh was off limits. Here, Torah Shebal Peh became available for the non-Jews. It's a difficult pshat because Hashem demanded that we translate the Torah. We came into Eretz Yisrael, translate the words of the Torah on the stones. So are you going to tell me when they translated the Torah on the stones, it was the King James Version? Not Mestava. Mestava, when they translated the Torah into 70 languages on the stones and they came into Eretz Yisrael, it was based upon tradition. It was based upon Torah Shebaal Peh.
Was it a literal translation? Or was
no, I would assume not. I would assume it brought out the tradition of Torah Shebaal Peh. It wasn't a, that's why the Goyim did not know. They can translate the words literally, but we all know if you attempt to translate the words literally, it doesn't make any sense. There's repetition, and there are contradictions, and it's just not correct. An eye for an eye is not legally correct.
That's why the Gemara in Sota says they don't understand what it means when it says about the Chosaf Tolehem, it's called the Bay, you know, on the stones. Inside it told some Bas Sid, this is in Sota, what that means. In other words, write it all and then cover it with lime and then you can't see it? Or did it.
So what's the purpose then if you can't see it? To preserve
first,
it.
Cover it with lime okay. And then write it. We don't know what that means. Decided to what the purpose of the
sin was. But the simple understanding is the reason why they etched the Torah on the stone in 70 languages is to give the Goyim an opportunity to learn the Torah. That's a very simple understanding. And some commentators say straight out, if that's the case, the world should be struck with 3 days of darkness because the Greeks translated the Torah. What's the big deal? The answer is it's not the translation. It was the deviation in the translation.
Correct.
The 13 peritzos in the Torah, which boomeranged and echoed 100 years later in the same Yevanim breaching the Beis Hamikdash in 13 locations. The roosters came, what is it, the chickens came home to roost. You thought now we'll just make a little accommodation in the curriculum, yeah, you know, a little accommodation. We're going to make 313 politically correct translations.
What do we say they should have done? Be most in that fish and say we're not going to do it.
We don't know. We can't second guess them.
No, I understand. Yeah.
But maybe, yeah.
So what's the speculation? That's what
I'm maybe you know, the times have come. It's Gadnu Hadoros. It's just a reflection of the reality is that there are problems. What should have they done? It's not what they should have done at that moment in time. What should they have done 20 years before that it should not have come to this.
Right.
It came to this. Now you don't have a choice. Deal with it. We have no choice but to deal with it by making these 13 corrections. So what are you blaming me? We're blaming you because why did you let it come to this? 20 years ago, you could have done things that you would have not have gone down the slippery slope where now you would have to make these accommodations. Okay, so this is the choshech, this is the idea. The choshech came because of deviation. We're embarrassed of what Hashem has given us. 13 changes. The 13 changes echoed 100 years later, where it got bigger and bigger in the 13 breaches in the wall of the Beis Hamikdash, where the Goyim came and entered. And the Musar Haskel is, once you let the Satan, the Yetzirah, in a little bit, before you know, you find yourself in a place where you never would have imagined. Everyone, ever read these articles about people who are addicted to the internet, addicted to going to sites that they should not be? They all say exactly the same thing. It all starts out just a little. They just want to curious over a little thing, and then you go from a little thing to a bigger thing and another. This is the nature of addiction, bigger. And before you turn around, you're in places that in your wildest dreams you never imagined you'd be finding yourself. You would never go there l'chatchila. It trickles down. And that's what happened. A little accommodation, a little deviation in the MS of the Torah, and then a little more, before you turn around, 100 years later, who is offering sacrifices on the Mizbeach? A goy. And to whom is he offering a sacrifice? To a god, to an avodah zarah, and the mizbech is defiled, and they're shmad. They're 52 years with the Beis Hamikdash is under the control of the goyim, and there are problems. And every woman who gets married first has to have relations with the governor. It becomes a free for all. Why? It all started with the deviations, the accommodations that Klal Yisrael made in the translation of the Torah to satisfy the Goyim. 13, look, I told you this many times, Cardinal O'Connor, which I happen to like a lot. He was Jewish, though. He was Jewish. His mother was Jewish, we know as a fact. His mother was a Yid. He was a Yid. Remember Cardinal O'Connor?
Yeah.
He had a certain chashivas to him. They don't make cardinals like that anymore. Lustig is not as... You look at some of the old videos. You're not allowed to talk about a shmas. But he's Jewish. I'm a little bit... I can't really figure out where you hold. His mother was Jewish. And he was a very dignified cardinal. He's very good friends with Rabbi Scherer. With Rabbi Scherer. And when the art school published the stone edition, on the table there, the stone edition of a Chumash, of the Chamishe Chumshe Torah, and he got a hold of it. Okay, this is what they say. The first thing he opened up is to the translation. Shavu Avraham Avinu said to Eliezer and Yishmael, Shavu lechem poi im hachamar. And there it said in the translation, Am Hadoimel Lechamar, a nation that is comparable to a donkey. In other words, the Torah calls, Rashi quotes the Chazal, that the Umay Sa'olam are donkeys. The nations of the world are donkeys. He opened up the art brand, cutting edge, 20th century, right? This was cutting edge. It was a novelty. The art scroll Chumash, not the stone edition. It was an incredible thing. Today we take it for granted. But when the first one was published, it was wow. And he says, oh, look at that. They're still calling us donkeys. That's what he said. It's on public record. They're still calling us donkeys. So if you want to be politically correct, right? You want to be politically correct. When you translate Chil Hashem, it's going to be on YouTube. Everyone's going to be watching. When we translate the Torah, we're gonna manipulate it a little bit. It's a little bit just a shtickle in order, because we're embarrassed. We're embarrassed of Rashi. We're embarrassed of the Rashbam, of the Targum. They were barbaric. Ancient times. You're embarrassed? Really? You're embarrassed of your legacy?
I'm embarrassed, but you don't want to antagonize.
Where do you draw the line? Where do you draw the line? You don't want to antagonize versus being embarrassed. Where do you draw the line? It's a tough thing. It's a very look. The Chachamim, they did it. You're right. They said sometimes you have no choice. You know, I don't have the answers for you. This is a very big problem. And also, that was also deleted. Antagonistic things.
Well, maybe that's why you have the difference in the Targum between Targum Yonis and Targum Onkelos, because one did it literally. Targum Onkelos was more literal and very few actual changes. One of the famous changes you have in the Mikates is one of the Yoreme Yodo. That's one of the few times that the Targum translates it using his extra. He says Yoreme Sraglo, that no one will ride your horse.
Ooh, your horse, wow.
Yeah, that's what famous Targum, because it says Lo Yoreme and Yoraglo, it means ride, step up on your horse. It's very rare that he actually adds commentary.
Unkelos. Fascinating.
It's one of the few times that he does it.
Okay, so this is a very critical. So what happens? Once you start making one change, that they made that type of change. They didn't want to antagonize Talmai HaMelech. Because they were embarrassed, or they didn't want to antagonize him, you know what happened? 100 years later, his children walked into the Beis HaMikdash and offered sacrifices to gods on the Mizbeach. Once you make a breach in the authenticity of the Torah, it's a slippery slope. You will find yourself in a place you never imagined.
But if he had scholars that know Hebrew, they would have noticed the difference.
Not necessarily, because, as we said, the translation was not a literal translation. He was asking them for a translation based upon your tradition. Torah Shebaal Peh. They had no access to Torah Shebaal Peh. It was the first. Now, what about the stones of Moshe? That was gone. If they had, they would go there. They couldn't find those stones. So it was the deviation is what brought 3 days of darkness. And those 3 days of darkness, as symbolic of the 3 days of darkness in Egypt, which basically means we have darkness, but the world has light, they have access to our secrets, and that was the beginning of the Chorban. So you have to appreciate, you know, we're coming out to Asara B'Teves. Asara B'Teves is the beginning of the Chorban. The very, very beginning. The Chorban has 4 stages. Stage 1 was the siege. The siege lasted for 2.5 years. Stage 2, the walls were breached. The enemy entered. And for 3 weeks, there was fighting, trying to still protect the Beis HaMikdash. Stage 3 was the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And stage 4 was the Chorban of the remnants of the survivors who still lived in Eretz Yisrael, the assassination of Gedaliah ben Achikam, who was the last holdout. The governor appointed, he maintained a yishuv. No one could come along and say, you're occupiers. If Gedaliah ben Achikam was not assassinated, Jews would have been in the land continuously from the time of the Chorban until the rebuilding. No one can ever make up a Baba Maisa and say it's not your land. You've come out of nowhere, because the truth was there were 52 years where there wasn't a single Jew living in the land. Because there was no one living in the land for 52 years, that's why the government of Pesach to say, well, it's not your land, you didn't live here. 52 years went by, there wasn't even one Jewish soul living in this land. That's it, it's over for you. 52 years, a long time. You gave it up. Now you want it back? You're occupiers. Where does that come from? It comes all from Tzom Gedaliah. Because they assassinated Gedaliah, which forced their survivors to abandon the land, we have all the tzaras today. All the tzaras today in modern Israel are rooted in Tzom Gedaliah. So the first stage again is Asar B'Teves, that's the siege. It's 2.5 years late before Shavuos B'Tamuz. Wouldn't it be good if we only had Shavuos B'Tamuz every 3 years? We should really have a 3-year cycle.
Let's take a vote.
3-year cycle. Shavuos B'Tamuz. Seriously, why did Chazal Taka do that? That would have been very logical. You have Asar B'Teves. And then in 2.5 years, Shavuos B'Tamuz. And then we'll have that same year, we'll have Tisha B'Av. And then a year later, not than that, a year later, we'll have Tzom Gedaliah. It'll be like a 4-year cycle. Wouldn't that be an interesting idea? Don't give anyone ideas here. But we do it obviously every single year. But the truth is, the beginning of the Chorban really begins with yesterday. Because they breached the walls. They only had the koyach to breach the walls of Yerushalayim when there was another breach. And that was a breach in the Kedusha of Klal Yisrael. The earliest breach, at least in the Bayashani, of the Kedusha of Klal Yisrael was the corrupt translation of the Torah. Changes. 13 deviations. 13 deviations is really where it all started. It's the haschola of the Chorban. Now, before we go to the test, there's a very big debate. Was this intended by Talmai as something good or something bad? I think we're brought up as children with an attitude that anything a guy does is bad. And that's the way, I mean, a Holocaust, a generation after the Holocaust, there's no other way to look at a guy than to suspect ulterior motives. So Talmai, I want to know what's going on with you Jews. I want access to your secrets. So I'm going to lock you up in solitary confinement. I'm going to torture you until you produce a translation, so I can know all the secrets. This was torture. Okay, there was torture involved in extracting from the Chachamim the translation of the Torah. Isn't that what we assume? For what purpose? To discover secrets, to have power over the Jewish people. However, many Mepharshim say that's not the pshat. He wanted to bring benefits. He was a friendly king. He wanted to expand the scope of the Torah. His idea was not, you know, you're Jews, I'm a guy, you know, we can live together. So let me give you a gift. I'll make it easy for you. I'll provide you with an article shas. I will fund there's a project. The Jews need someone to they want to make a new Gemara, the Sifta. They want to make an article. Article they read. I once read a write up article. The article English Shas cost article $42 million. Okay, they did fundraising $42 million to pay for the cost of publishing the 72 volumes of the 72 volumes of the article English Shas. Okay, that's not the Hebrew, and that's not we're not talking about the Yerushalmi, both Hebrew and English, just the English article Shas, $42 million. Where do you get $42 million from? So Tom Hamel says, I'll pay for it. I'll pay for it. Talmai HaMelech was the best friend of Klal Yisrael. He went, I said, I want to go to the Moetzes meeting of the Gedolei Yisrael. I want to be there. I want to see what's going on. I want to see what the problems are, and I'll help you out. And he demanded. He came there. He went to the Moetzes meeting. He sat there. He heard what's going on in Klal Yisrael. I'll pay for this. I'll pay for this. And I'll pay for a Shas also. Article $42 million. So when they wrote the Shas, they said, he's going to read it. He's going to read it. And he reads it. You know, we have to make some changes, whatever it is. Some of the commentators learned that his attempt was to benefit Klal Yisrael. 100 years later, the Greeks had no desire to benefit Klal Yisrael. Their desire was to abolish, to uproot, to destroy the sanctity of Klal Yisrael. These are the two different enemies. Hatzileina miyad ochi, miyad eis. A very famous svar. There are two dangers. There's a danger when Esav kisses us, and there's a danger when Esav wants to kill us. Unfortunately, we all know too much about Esav trying to kill us. But we all know that we're very much affected by Western civilization, which more often than not is at odds with our hashkafa, and we brainwash ourselves in thinking that there's really no conflict. Everything is all fine and good. But we all know, once in a while we have a wake-up call, is that, you know, this is goyish. There is miyad ochi.
That's exactly what's happening now. In terms of they promised to fund our education, but then we have to adapt their English standards.
All right, I have a lot to say on this, but Baruch Hashem, I have no voice. Baruch Hashem, Hashem, save me from getting into trouble, so I have no voice, so we'll leave that out for now.
Tomorrow?
Hopefully not. Hopefully I can control myself. But in any event, but there's always a double danger in Klal Yisrael. Miyad Ochi, Miyad Esav. Golus Yovan began with the Golus of Miyad Ochi. Let's be friends. And the way we can be friends, I'll also learn a daf Gemara. The Goyim will come together with Jews to sit at the table. We'll all learn a daf Gemara together. In Yiddish. But that means if you're sitting with a guy, there are certain sensitivities, you know. I used to give a daf yomi. I still, and I once it happened twice. I gave a daf. Women came to my daf twice. I gave a show. There were women there, so I had to be very careful. Very careful what I said. Okay, you can't go say, you know, the standard yeshiva show and the schois, the ishus as a chefsa. you can't say all the no by how do you chaloisa kedushin. The Ran says kedushin. The isha is mafkir herself to the husband. You can't say these things in front of women. It doesn't go. When you're sitting with a guy, you can't talk. You can't read the Gemara. It's not the same Gemara. That was the problem. Miyad ochi, when they're trying to be nice to us. And we accommodate them, and we're influenced by them. This is one form of golus. Then there's the other korban when they want to kill us. Chanukah, giborim biad chaloshim v'ram biad ma'atim v'tmei ma'atim. It's all about blood and war and fighting and battles and glory. That's Chanukah. When Chanukah is over, 8 days later, we go back in history. It's amazing how we're going back in time, and we discuss the other side of the coin of Yavan. Yavan's not over. Yavan's not over. When the Chanukah miracle happened, it wasn't over. It was 25 more years. There were 25 more years of wars until that Tkufa came to an end after the Chanukah miracle. After Chanukah, we go back and we reflect upon the Tzara of Talmai HaMelech, which according to some is not necessarily an attempt to destroy us, but was Adarabba, was an attempt to embrace us. I also want to learn a Daf Gemara. Translate it for me. We'll sit together. And unfortunately, we have to know where the divisions are. Hamavdil ben Kodesh l'cho ben Or l'choshech ben Yisrael l'amin. It's a very, very difficult balance. We all know that. A very difficult balance to know the boundaries. Pasakum, stamyenam. There are boundaries, and the boundaries, we have to be very, very careful. And that's pretty much what's happened, is a reflection of the eighth day of Teves. Now, what happened? Let's skip one day. Let's skip today for one moment. What happened on the ninth day of Teves? Now, we depend on the tenth day of Teves, or tomorrow. Asara b'Teves, Pashut, the walls, the siege began. The siege upon Yerushalayim began, and this was the beginning of the Korban. Chazal tell us, Aschalto de Puranusa. The beginning of the Puranus is worse, is more chomor than the end. That is why, if theoretically, if it would be possible in our calendar for Asara B'Teves to fall out on Shabbos, we would fast on Shabbos. We would not have a choice. Tisha B'Av often falls out on Shabbos. We wouldn't fast. Even if it falls out on Friday, we wouldn't fast. Doesn't, can't happen. Can't happen Friday. But we would push it to Sunday. Why? Because it's in the middle. It's in the middle. It's not. The beginning is Muhammad. It is the Dover Chomer Admoid, the beginning of the siege. It is the beginning of the Korban. With regard to the Holocaust. So many want to say that it was my fault, and we should have spoken about it, spent on it. Kristallnacht. Kristallnacht is the day of to commemorate, from a Yiddish perspective, many Gedolim feel that if you want to commemorate Kristallnacht, the day you should devote is the Holocaust. To devote is Kristallnacht, because Kristallnacht is accepted in the world as the beginning of the Chorbin, of what happened to the Jews. Some want to say it was even before that. It was the voyage of the St. Louis. Okay, the voyage of the St. Louis.
It
was later?
Yeah,
no, I think it was before. Yeah. What?
Yeah,
it was later. Okay, what? Okay, I made a mistake. Yeah. They said, okay. Yeah. So, Kristallnacht, some want to focus on that. That's a very significant, that was a watershed moment when no one wants the Jews. It totally changed. Some say that Hitler, I don't know the history, but the Yuk, it changed his frame of mind. No one wants the Jews. No one wants the Jews. I'll do whatever I want. So these are times, and tomorrow is a very serious fast. Now some of the commentators say that this is what it says in the Dirshu, the back of the Mishnah Berurah, the new Dirshu. He cites sources. Ezra HaSofer died on Asara B'Teves. That's when he really died. But because we cannot devote a day, that day to Ezra HaSofer, it's already taken. The 10th day is already taken. So we push it back and we fast on the 9th day. Today. And it says in Shulchan Aruch, Uvetisha Bay, okay, this Shulchan Aruch is one of a kind. I don't think there's anything like this in the entire Shulchan Aruch. On the 9th day of today, Hayoim, on the 9th day of Teves, you're supposed to fast. Is a fast day. Anyone else still fasting today? He's supposed to fast. Lein vaychal. There are slichos that can be said today. Why? Loi noida. Ezoi hi hatzora she'era bo. No one knows. These are the words of Shulchan Aruch. No one knows what tzara calamity occurred today that we for generations have been commemorating this day as a tainis tzibur. Unfortunately, for some reason, we don't fast today. We don't fast yesterday, we don't fast today. All this whole simon, someone like basically cut it out of the Shulchan Aruch. We don't do this today because I guess we're very weak. We can't survive if we're going to fast so many days. So, but the truth is, yesterday, today, and tomorrow are three continuous fast days. You don't have to fast at night. You get a break. You're able to eat at night. But we're really supposed to fast 3 days in a row. And it's shocking that even when the Shulchan Aruch wrote this, and he was certainly only 250 years ago, he was certainly fasting. When the Beis Yosef wrote this, he was fasting, no question. He didn't write this. He's not a liar. If he wrote this, the Beis Yosef was fasting. Okay? 250 years ago, when this was written, he was fasting.
Probably didn't have what to Could be.
That's a lot of people in Europe fasting.
Okay, he was fasting. And he's writing, I don't know why we're fasting. It is not known to us, not me. I know Kol Torah Kula Beis Yosef. You know who? Is there anything he didn't know? The Magid Meshav, the Malachim, used to come and learn with him. He had what to teach the Malachim. He did not know. He's why V'loy Noida Ezet Tzara Eirabai. Tradition tells you to fast today. You fast today. Mishneh Berurah, he quotes Mefarshim that says we do know why. We know the secret. The secret is Ezra HaSofer was nifter on this. The Ezra HaSofer was the Gadol Hadar. He was equal to Moshe Rabbeinu. He was the brain. He was the force behind the building of the Bayis Sheni. He was the koyach. He was the leader. If not for him, there would never have been a Bayis Sheni. Never. He was the koyach that brought it about. And Mashiach should have come. A lot of things should have happened. He was basically on the same level as Moshe Rabbeinu. And he died. And basically, we're not just commemorating his death, we're commemorating what could have been. He failed. He failed in bringing Mashiach. He failed in bringing back the entire Klal Yisrael. Why did he fail? Because we did not let him succeed. It's our failure, not his failure. He wanted to take us and bring Mashiach and bring the Gula, bring the entire Klal Yisrael. No one listened. Only 5% of Judaism, of religious Jews, listened to him and returned to rebuild the Bayis Sheni. Only 5%. Isn't that an amazing number? It's the same exact number as Jews in the world who made Aliyah after the State of Israel was established in 1948. The law of return. You're a Jew, come, the door is opened. How many Jews were there in the world at that point in time? I don't know the exact numbers, but the statistics are who took advantage of the law of return in 1948 in the State of Israel? Same exact percent as number of Jews on record who returned at the call of Ezra to rebuild the Bayis Sheni. Fascinating. Imamish history repeats itself. And of course, you have the Misnagdim. Okay, let's not go there. Let's not go. But this is what it says in the Mefarshim. That's why we fast. We're fasting at our own failure. Okay, now there are many other reasons given. I wonder the other reason has become extremely popular due to the research of Rabbi Schneur Lyman. Very, very incredible Talmud Chacham, fascinating. We all know is that it's the yard site of the founder of Christianity, which was the first pope. I don't know who was the pope yet. Who is it? One of the founders, one of the people who was instrumental in establishing Christianity. It was viewed as a positive development because Christianity has a very complex history, and maybe we should spend some time on this as we get closer to December 25th. The origins and what it means to Klal Yisrael is that in the early days, there were many tukufas, it's a very long history, but there was a point in time where the Christians, you could not differentiate an Orthodox, what we called an Orthodox Jew, from a closet believer in Yeshu HaNotzri. They Shema Shabbos, they wear tefillin, they daven, they send their children to the best yeshivas. Everything is the same. But you would never believe that in the person's mind, he's a full-fledged believer in Yeshu HaNotzri. He's a follower. He's a follower. So we have no clue. We don't even know what it's like. The history has been destroyed, been erased, been manipulated by the Christians. So what did the Beis Din do? The Gedolei Yisrael saw there's a very, very great danger, existential threat to Klal Yisrael, because these closet Christians are going to win. They're going to prevail, and they're going to take the whole Klal Yisrael off the tracks and follow this Meshugana Yeshu, and who knows where we're going to go. So this is what it says. This is his research. You have to listen to online. It's one of the most popular shiurim on yutorah.org. It's amazing, amazing stuff. Hard to believe, but I believe every word he says. Is the chachamim, the tanoim, mamish, the halakha tanoim, they said, there's a person here in this room that's going to have to go al kiddush Hashem. Could be. I don't remember the details.
Say boy.
He's going to have to go undercover. It sounds like a movie, right? But this is what it says. One of the Tanoim went undercover. He's going to make believe he's a follower of Yeshua Notri. He's going to go to Mamash, be his biggest chosid. His biggest chosid. And join the whole chevra. And he was very charismatic, very popular. And he rose in the leadership role amongst this group. And he was then able to take them and completely separate them from traditional Jews. Why Shabbos? Let's observe Sunday.
Well, that's what Paul did, yeah.
Why all the mitzvahs? It's enough to do these mitzvahs. He was very clever in what he did. He himself remained fully Shomer Shabbos Torah Mitzvahs, it says. He locked himself up in a room. He only came out once they worshipped him. He rose all the way to the top. He was very clever, but in the process, he's no longer part of Klal Yisrael. Yet he had to sacrifice himself in order to save Klal Yisrael. We observe this day, whether he actually died on this day, whether he did not die on this day, but the day, the ninth day, is a day that we observe in his memory. A day that we pay homage to his neshama for the ultimate sacrifice. His ultimate sacrifice by giving him his identity, his connection to Klal Yisrael, in order to save Klal Yisrael. By going undercover and drawing away Klal Yisrael. And that's why this is so sensitive, because if you would write this in Shulchan Aruch, you could imagine where the Shulchan Aruch would find itself. Okay? It would not be in the Beis Medrash anymore. So it's in disguise, v'loy noida, it's not known, al ezet sara, on which sara it came about. Now I want to just wind down 2 minutes, is just a little drush, on why we observe this day. Why we observe this day. And there's not this day. I want to compare this day to another 3 days in the year, and that's 3 days in the year. The beginning of Chodesh Sivan. On the first day of Chodesh Sivan, did you say Tachnun?
No.
Rosh Chodesh Sivan. You don't say Tachnun Rosh Chodesh. On the third day of Rosh Chodesh on Sivan, do you say Tachnun?
No.
No. Why not? It's the beginning of the Shloishas Yimei Hagbalah. 3, 4, 5. 3 days of Hagbalah. And then comes Matan Torah. What about the second day of Sivan? There's absolutely no reason why you cannot say Tachlun on the second day of Sivan. There's no reason why. It's called Yom HaMiyuchas. There are many reasons why Yom HaMiyuchas, a day of special ancestry. A day that's in the Anha. Yom HaMiyuchas. What's Yom HaMiyuchas? What does this mean? So the best answer, the one that I like the most, is it's Egen Yichus. It's on Yichus. What's on Yichus? I'm sandwiched in between 2 days when you don't say Tachlan. If you don't say Tachlan on the first day, and you don't say Tachlan on the third day, how can you say Tachlan on day two? If you're standing in a good place, you're in a good place. It's good for you. You have good neighbors. I have good neighbors. You know why you fast today? You fast today because we have bad neighbors. It's a Yom HaMiyuchas today, in the opposite sense. V'loy noida. You don't need a reason. And what does it really reflect upon? It's really another idea, but you can tie the two together. The Rachmana Litzlan, there are a lot of tsaros in Klal Yisrael. There are a lot of tsaros. We live in a very difficult time where we have no gedolim. We don't have any neviim. We don't have any gedolim that can tell us why bad things happen to good people. There are a lot of tsaros out there. V'loy noida. The other things we know, we fast on Asar B'Teves, this happened. Tisha B'Av, this happened. Tzadik Gedalia, this happened. And we can take all of the tzaras of the klal and we can squash it, we can figure out this type of tzara relates to this. This tzara relates to Tainus Esther. This tzara relates to Tisha B'Av. This tzara is Tzadik Gedalia. But there are many more tzaras that we really can't figure out where they belong in the calendar. When do you have an opportunity to pour out your heart and express your pain for all of the tzaras that exist in Klal Yisrael that you cannot put your finger on. You don't know why. You don't know how it happened, why it happened, what we're supposed to do, that it should not happen again, what it relates to. Rachman al-Litzlan. There are a lot of tzaris. That's today. Today is a day of the klal. It's a general day of tainus, of tzara. For you know what? It's for all of the things that says in Shulchan Aruch, loy noida, eizayhi ha-tzara she'era boy. Okay, you have to translate a little bit loosely, but it's a day that captures all the tzaras that we can't define. We know we're in trouble. We know there are so many problems. We don't know the reason. It's just a day for the Klal Yisrael, a catch-all for all the... It captures the essence of what Golus is all about. All right, thank you for listening to my horse voice. We'll try again tomorrow, we'll see what happens. Tomorrow, what's tomorrow? Regular time, a little bit regular time tomorrow. We'll start regular time tomorrow. And we'll see. We'll see how the day goes. We'll see how it goes tomorrow. We'll see how it goes tomorrow, what we'll do, what we'll learn. Maybe we'll have mincha tomorrow here. Maybe, yeah, maybe not. Now, here, right now, that mincha. Ashra Yashra Yisrael. What's up? You want to have mincha? It's fine.